Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Bhakti Bhai Bhava ki jai, Granta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Jai Nitai Gopriman ki jai. Okay, so up to chapter 18. And tonight we're going to converse through 36 to 42. So we're hearing about Aditi approaching Kashyapa to receive a child who can kill Indra. So this is leading into the pastime of the seventh canto, where you'll hear about Aditi's children who are born, whose names are Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. So basically, from canto 3 to canto, the end of canto 7, we're hearing about the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. And then in Canto 8 and Canto 9, we'll hear about the other mandals that will be discussed. About that. So it's still the descendants' fault coming from Swayambhuva Manu. And now we're hearing about the appearance of the Asuras and so forth. And this will all be discussed in the next several cantos. Okay. So, some very interesting purports tonight. Last night we heard. We heard about the relationship between the wife and the husband. Tonight we'll also continue to hear something about that, and particularly about the nature of women. Like that. So, some strong purports and some quite famous purports also. So we need to understand these in their proper context.
There were
demons, there were asuras. The race was already there, the asuric race was there. Because in the beginning of the creation, all the different races are born. Okay, but then these two particular demons were born, they were like the most powerful asuras in the history of this universe. Any other points? Okay. So, my dear gentle wife, because you have worshipped me with great devotion, considering me a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall reward you by fulfilling your desires, which are unattainable for an unchaste wife. So as we heard last night, the wife should see the husband as Supreme Demigod, right? And the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So it's a very powerful description. So all the Mataji's were very impressed by that description last night, and they found it very inspiring, and they said their marriages have improved a lot since yesterday. And it describes that the husband must also be qualified. If he is to accept the kind of respect which is mentioned here in the Bhagavatam from the wife, then he must be qualified to accept that respect, which means he must be actually representing Krishna properly. So if the husband is representing Krishna properly, and if the wife can respect him properly, then you'll have a harmonious relationship. But it means both have to be qualified. Even though these purports are mainly speaking about the women, about the wife, but the husband also has to be qualified. Otherwise it doesn't work. You can't just demand of your wife that she has to treat you like the representative of the Supreme Lord or the greatest demigod in the universe. You know, you can't demand that of your wife unless you're actually having some qualification like that. Then the relationship will be successful. Any points?
Well, deserve then desire.
First deserve then desire. So also we mentioned last night, the most important qualities for the wife to have, according to Srila Prabhupada. What are the two most important qualities? What's that? Chastity and cooking. That kind of comes under chastity. But of all the qualities, that's considered the best quality. Now, the Prabhupada says that the women must be very good cooks and chaste, like that. So it mentions here in this verse specifically that the woman must be chaste towards her husband. It means she should not become attracted to other men, and she should be very dedicated to her husband, and she wins his heart by her cooking. So it's a scientific process, actually. It sounds simplistic, but it's actually scientific. We see that when the women do cook very nicely, the husbands become very pacified. And we see that they actually indebt their husbands by cooking very nicely for them. So it is the scientific quality, even though it sounds simplistic, but it actually works. Even in this modern day and age, when it's supposed to be a modern situation, if the wife cooks very nicely for the husband, then the husband actually becomes greatly indebted to the wife, and things become peaceful. It helps the relationship greatly. So she should be chaste, and she should be a good girl. Like that. So of course, then we can ask them, what if the wife is not a good cook? Then what do we do? What did Radha Balava say? He said temple. The wife's not a good cook, at least you got the temple. His wife is a very good cook. He wasn't insinuating she wasn't a good cook. He's just saying, in general, then the temple is there. That's one answer. Any other points? What did you say, Russell? What's that?
Husband can learn to cook.
Husband can learn to cook.
So if he doesn't want to be hungry and the wife doesn't know how to cook, and there is no temple around.
That is practical. That is practical. The husband can also cook.
So many cook, you know. So many they cook sometimes better than women.
Yeah, that can be there. That can be there. Any other solutions?
Change your taste.
Change your taste? Learn to enjoy burnt cooking. very advanced consciousness.
They can do solar yoga. The one who is achieving perfection in that one, he doesn't have to eat anything.
Okay, it's also a very advanced level.
Yes, it's very controlling the senses, everything, perfect.
Okay. Maybe you can set the example on that one.
I'm trying to. I'm practicing it.
Real? Oh my God. Any other points?
You can give them a book.
As a subtle hint. On Mother's Day. Yeah. So it means the wife can learn, she can take cooking lessons. If the wife is not such a good cook, naturally, then she can take lessons and she can learn how to cook more nicely. Some people are just not very good at things, certain things, but then others are very good. So, but you can usually improve just by practice. If you're sincere, then you can improve, generally. It's a very important point. It should be there. Any other points?
In old days, like the grandmother and the mother used to teach all the daughters the cooking and everything, so they know from the childhood. But now it is like it's not possible, or somehow it's not working, so they have to learn it later on.
Yeah, it's a shame that the system is broken down. Many of the girls don't even know how to cook when they get married. So. Any other points?
We're still in India, like I say, united family, so the mother-in-law always help her to come to the neighbor.
Yeah, in the Vedic system, then the daughter-in-law would be sent before the boy and the girl got married. Then she would be sent to the boy's home when the boy is not there, and the mother-in-law would teach her how to cook like that, and she would learn how to cook all the things that the boy would like. So the system was very scientific like that, so very successful system. Any other points?
You contradicted what?
I'm a little reluctant and hesitant, but I'll give you 1 minute.
Yes, mm-hmm. Because you know what, if you eat too much only, death is coming very close probably. If you eat less, then you live longer. And because my grandmother, both of my grandfathers, they lived till 84, they never used to, but they used to eat tasty, but they used to eat only this much protein. For 3 times, they eat only this much. If that prolonged their life till the 85. Every day my grandfather used to eat only this much, but he eat tasty food. My grandmother used to cook tasty, but only this much. And then 3 times, they eat only this much, and they very less, they drink a lot of water, and walk also every day, and they live long life. They have long, healthy life. If you eat too much, then death will come very close for them. I know that. Eating too much is not very good. Because a machine is like a machine, but you keep on putting things into it, no? Keep on rotating, and then one day it will stop. So, like very less, we have to use this machine very less. It's a yantra. Yantra would run my, for very little you use it, it will last here for long.
Thank you for your comment.
Okay. Okay. Doctors also say that we
have your time is up.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Diti replied, "Oh my husband, oh great soul, I have now lost my sons. If you want to give me a benediction, I ask you for an immortal son who can kill Indra. I pray for this because Indra, with the help of Vishnu, has killed my 2 sons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu."
People, how he killed what was his role in killing
Vishnu
and Hiranyakashipu? I don't get it.
Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says because he's the devotee of Vishnu, and then Diti is taking it that he has prayed to Vishnu to kill them. And then the Lord came as Nisringadeva and Varaha in order to kill them. So then she blames Indra. If you had not have prayed, they would not have appeared and they would not have killed.
Okay.
Like that. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he answers it like that.
And in Hiranyakashipu's case, he played an actual role. He kidnapped his wife.
Yeah, he played a role. He's definitely involved.
But he killed him because of Prahlad, because he tried to kill Prahlad.
Yeah, but originally the Lord appears because the demigods are praying like that. So.
Okay.
That's why he comes.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Can you please explain it properly, because yesterday we were discussing that this is before the birth of Hiranyakashipu. Now they are saying that Indra killed them, that's why she's angry of Indra. So we can get it properly.
Sometimes the Bhagavatam jumps. Like if you read the Bhagavatam, sometimes it kind of jumps in time. So it's kind of leading up to something, and then suddenly Aditi's saying this, so it's kind of going forward in time. But then when we get to the seventh canto, it'll go back again. Like that. So Bhagavatam sometimes does this.
So Aditi, the title of this chapter is Aditi goes to kill Indra. That was because Indra killed his two sons,
right? Okay. And then it's like, then that leads to the description of the 2 sons in the seventh canto, which is in a few chapters from now. So. The Bhagavatam doesn't always go in chronological order. Sometimes it goes forward and then goes back. And it's like when you're telling someone a story, sometimes you go forward, then you go back, and like that. So. Okay. So we'll read the purport. Manoj Prabhu, can you please read?
The word Indra Hanan, means one who can kill Indra. But it also means one who follows Indra. The word Amritim refers to the demigods who do not die like ordinary human beings because they have extremely long durations of life. For example, the duration of Lord Brahma's life is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Sahasra Yuga Paryanta Mahayya Brahmana Udo. Even the duration of one day or 12 hours of Brahma is 4,300,000 years multiplied by 1,000. Thus, the duration of his life is inconceivable for an ordinary human being. The demigods are therefore sometimes called Amara, which means one who has no death. In this material world, however, everyone has to die. Therefore, the word Amritim indicates that Diti wanted a son who would be equal in status to the demigods.
Okay. What are the points?
What son is she talking about?
Yeah, his name is Marut, but then he becomes divided into 49. Yeah, 49. It's Marut, it's one person at this point, but then that person becomes divided by Indra and then takes birth as 49.
So does he eventually kill Indra?
No.
Then the show only is telling that I could be the desire. And the desire is never something to kill him, isn't it?
Well, technically, at this point in time, he's just saying, I will fulfill your desire. And then she says, now I want a son who will kill Indra. So then he becomes very distraught. And then he purifies her by saying, okay, now you have to perform tapasya in bhakti yoga. So by performing devotional service, she purifies her consciousness and then she gives up that desire to kill Indra like that. So
it looks like she's very much attached to her son, irrespective of what that I call. It looks like she hasn't learned the lesson. So she continues to have this.
Yeah, well, to a degree, because Prabhupada makes this point, even if the son's bad, the mother still loves that son. It's just nature. Even the son's a criminal, even the son murders, but still the mother, she sees that, but still she has some love for that boy, even though he does terrible things. So it's just the nature of motherhood.
Also in the made them demigods, 149 girls, ultimately became demigods by Indra.
It was also mentioned in third chapter that Niti already knew that Hiranyakasipu are going to be bad people, that's why she holds the belt of him for billions of years.
Not millions, but like 100 years or so.
They show that she's a good thing.
Yeah, she's good. She's a good person. Any other point? So, Prabhupada points out in the purport that all of us are going to
die.
It's not long now till all of us die. Like that. It's just a matter of time, a very short amount of time, actually, in terms of universal time. It's not very long at all. So we should not be become caught up in envy and petty material things, and we should not be whimsical, and we should not mistreat others. Just like I was watching one documentary, which Chaitan sent me during the week, about this man who lives in Siberia who thinks he is an incarnation of Jesus. Did you see it?
Yeah, just a few days.
Did you watch the whole thing?
Almost.
Okay. Yeah. He says some very, very good things, actually. But then some of the things he says are a little bit off, like that. But he makes this point. They say at the very end, they said, please give us one teaching for everyone in this world. And he says, never think yourself superior to anyone. Which is actually Shikshastika. Right? It's actually devotion. It's actually the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's God consciousness. Never think yourself superior to anyone. So the problem is, in the material world, because we think we're superior to others, then we commit offences to other people, and we also waste a lot of our lives in petty arguments with other people which are not necessary. If we just took a humble position and we didn't see ourselves as being superior all the time, or at least some of the time, then we wouldn't get into so many complications in our life. So life is very short and we're all going to die. And when you know you're going to die, generally you see people, they become very humble and they become very forgiving. Not always, but quite often that happens. So we should try to get into that consciousness now. We should not try to wait another 40 years or whatever it is until we're obviously going to die, but we should enter that consciousness now. In other words, we should not think we are superior to others. We should become humble and we should treat people properly. As Chanakya says, what are the three lessons Chanakya gives us? How do we see women?
Mother.
See them as your mother. Then, how do you see someone else's possessions?
Garbage.
Yeah, he says garbage. He says refuse, or things which are untouchable. And then how does he say we should treat other people? Yeah, the same as we would like to be treated by others. So is that the way that we treat other people? Do we treat other people like that, the way we would like to be treated ourselves? We don't always do that. I don't always do that. I don't always treat everyone the way I would like to be treated. But Lord Chaitanya says, offer respect to others and don't expect respect for yourself. Right? So that's the consciousness we should be in, because we are going to die very soon. You can say, well, I might live for another 50 years, but that's not very long, actually. So we should try to cultivate the consciousness of someone who's going to die now. As Bhakti Tirtha Swami said before he left this world, he said we should die before we die. In other words, our false ego should die first. Then our external body, our gross body, will die. But it's better if the false ego dies before that. So we should die before we die. That's actually the lesson that we're all supposed to learn in this world. So if you do that, then your life will be very pleasurable. And if you don't do that, you'll waste so much time arguing with this person and that person and going back and forth. So many problems like that. Life is too short to worry about all of these petty things that we worry about. Any points?
It's just an example you gave of the Siberian
teacher, yeah.
From what I could hear to the concept of simple living, agree with society, belief in God, reading scriptures. To me, it looks like he must have read about the teacher, what kind of philosophy. Because I could hear that in many of the Orthodox churches, in that part of the world, they are referring to the Bhagavad Gita in order to, because they're not able to answer the questions that people ask. So I wouldn't be surprised. Because it's a new phenomenon.
Yeah, it's possible. Might have been like that. The other thing is that truth is eternal, or it is relevant under all circumstances. So you see, regardless of which religion it comes through, if it's the same principle, then it will be the same. I mean, he's obviously got realization, otherwise he couldn't say the things that he said. So he did say some very good things. Did you watch the first half or the second half? Okay, yeah, second half is where he actually gets interviewed after they get to the top of the mountain. And it's very interesting though. I watched the whole thing. I might even watch it again. It's very, very interesting.
I guess. The false ego does travel to the next life, or where you left it?
It travels to the next life if you don't get rid of it.
Okay. So, I think the point goes along with the story.
Yeah, if you dissolve it, Prabhupada actually says in one purport, he says that the false ego has to dissolve. So if you dissolve it before you leave this body, then you don't have to take it with you, which means you'll go to the spiritual world. But if it's not dissolved, it will take you to your next body.
So at that particular point it goes, or from the crash you to work it out, or
the same false ego or something. We've had the same false ego since we got here. The gross body changes, but the false ego stays. So.
Yeah. Even like one of the Apple CEO, he was like suffering for some disease, fevers, and then like he was not sure when he was going to die, because he is going to die soon. So in the article before he died, the article says that one should spend his day just like the end of his life, so then he can do the best he could for that particular day. So like if you think that it is my last day, and then you will put all the effort to make the day better.
Yeah, that's how we should live, if we can. That's the best. Any other points? Upon hearing Diti's request, Kashyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, he lamented, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. Mahatma, can you read?
Although Kashyapa Muni was eager to fulfill the desire of his wife, Diti, when he heard that she wanted a son to kill Indra, his jubilation was immediately reduced to nothing because he was averse to the idea.
Any points?
He was in a similar situation when she approached him for meaning in the third canto. He did not want this meaning, it was going to be disastrous. He did not want to fulfill the desire that he had to fulfill. So he went, looks like he's in a similar situation where again this is right.
He understood the motive of his wife.
I heard in a lecture by Radhe Shambhu that Kashyapa Muni was a devotee of Lord Shiva. When you are narrating these past times, I haven't heard that before. First time. Third mentioned there was. Of course, he was saying that because Kashyapa Muni was too much under the influence of his wife, so he was too dependent on his wife.
Just be careful of your feet not touching the flowers, okay? Because they're Krishna's flowers, so be careful. Yeah, it mentions in that third canto pastime that Shiva was flying about at that time. I can't remember whether or not he was a devotee of Shiva, but he certainly at this point in time he advises Diti to worship Vishnu like that. So I'm not sure if I've heard that he's actually a devotee of Shiva.
I also can't remember exactly. Though I remember this, that Shiva was flying.
Yeah.
The whole verse of the ghosts and goblins.
It appears at this point in time that it seems like he's a devotee. Seems like he's a worshipper of Vishnu, a Vaishnava. Seems like that. So he could be, could be. I'm not sure. I haven't heard that he's.
As soon as one understands that one has committed an offense, then he must try to go to begin with to repentance. It's a big, very good quality of Kashyapa Muni that this tribulation comes into the lamentation. He understands this very well.
I was saying the same thing about the associate. If you promise something, you will do. I don't make a promise.
What do you think of a lecture of everything back. So she prayed to Lord Krishna, and the Krishna came and see her, and the Krishna told her, don't tell anyone right now about this. So she didn't tell her husband, but Radha Govind Maharaj was telling that Krishna was already knew, because she was a great devotee of Krishna, so he already knew that this is all being done.
So the basic lesson, or the basic point that Prabhupada is pointing out, is that devotees don't like to be involved in material activities. We don't like to get involved in things which are unnecessary. So this is just a materialistic situation. And devotees, as much as possible, we try to avoid these kind of situations in our lives. Just like our family members, they like to get us involved in all sorts of material situations. And the material energy itself is always trying to get us involved in material activities. But a devotee tries to avoid those things as much as possible, because it just leads one away from Krishna. So Kashyapa, he's being advised by Diti to do something which is not beneficial for his Krishna consciousness or spiritual development. It's not going to help him on his path of spiritual enlightenment. So devotees, we try to avoid these things as much as we can. Sometimes the family members do this. They try to bring us into things which we don't want to get involved in. Family does this all the time, actually. And it's quite often the family are non-devotees. They want you to do this, they want you to do that. They want you to get involved in so many different things. And it's very difficult for a devotee, because we don't want to get involved in these things. And it's hard for them to appreciate that. They think, oh, you should be obliged, and you should do these things, and you have this duty. And so you have to have a balance like that between how much you help or get involved, and then staying aloof as much as you can as well. Like that. So it's quite challenging like that. With my family, I just do as much as I need to do just to keep them happy. But that's as far as I go. You know, I just do what they need just so they'll be happy, just so they won't cause me too much grief by continuously harassing me. I hope my mother doesn't listen to all this. But then, at the same time, I try not to get too involved. Otherwise, it just becomes overly complicated. It's the nature of the material world to distract you from Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Chapter 14, verse 31, Prabhupada says, it appears from the talks of Kashyapa with his wife that he was the worshipper of Lord Shiva, and although he knew that Lord Shiva would not be pleased with him for such a performance, and he also says that he is the brethren of Lord Shiva, his brethren, so this is one of his
It appears to be both. It appears as a devotee of Shiva and a devotee of Vishnu, simultaneously. So he may not be a Shaivite. He might be a devotee, like a Vaishnava, who is following Shiva or something like that. It's hard to say like that. Any other points? Okay. Kashyapa thought, alas, I have now become too attached to material enjoyment. Taking advantage of this, my mind has been attracted by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a woman, my wife. Therefore, I am surely a wretched person who will glide down toward hell. This woman, my wife, has adopted a means that follows her nature, and therefore she is not to be blamed. But I am a man. Therefore, all condemnation upon me. I am not at all conversant with what is good for me, since I could not control my senses. So, Jamuna Lila, you like to read this purport?
The natural instinct of a woman is to enjoy the material world. She induces her husband to enjoy this world by satisfying his tongue, belly and genitals, which are called jivha, udara and upastha. A woman is expert in seeking palatable dishes so that she can easily satisfy her husband in eating. When one eats nicely, his belly is satisfied, and as soon as the belly is satisfied, the genitals become strong. Especially when a man is accustomed to eating meat and drinking wine and similar passion things, he certainly becomes sexually inclined. It should be understood that sexual inclinations are meant not for spiritual progress but for gliding down to hell. Thus, Kashyapa Muni considers this situation and lamented. In other words, to be a householder is very risky, unless one is trained and the wife is a follower of a husband. A husband should be Dharmam Bhagavata Iha, Bhagavatam 7.6.1. During the time of Brahmacharya, or student life, a Brahmachari should be taught to be expert in Bhagavad Dharma, or devotional service. Then, when he marries, if his wife is faithful to her husband and follows him in such life, the relationship between husband and wife is very desirable. However, a relationship between husband and wife without spiritual consciousness, but strictly for self-gratification, is not at all good. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.3 that especially in this age, Kali Yuga, Dampatye Viruchir Hetu, the relationship between husband and wife will be based on sexual power. Therefore, householder life in this Kali Yuga is extremely dangerous unless both the wife and husband take to Krishna consciousness.
So any points here?
The husband and wife must be devotees. And the husband should be under control. If he can't control the wife, then he's not doing the right thing.
How does he control her?
I think by developing devotional service. Developing devotional service, the husband does, the wife will learn, and from the wife, husband should learn.
Does it work?
It works, yeah.
Any other points?
We think Kardamani Devuti passed and how Kardamani was so petty and Devuti was a chaste follower of that thing because of him. So what Prabhupada is explaining here is the situation. They were leading that ideal marriage life.
This one practices the Brahmacharya and the course of training in earlier part of his life or is trained by the Vaishnavas. Those I cannot be successful because it will be contaminated by desires of political sense.
Good. Any other points?
When the deity is there, then the Krishna becomes the center of the house. Otherwise, just I and my consciousness will be the center of the house.
Are you offering the bogus Agonis so I can see it now? Are you still doing the system where it's on that second shelf where they can't see it? They can see it? Can they see it? A teacher? I can? That's good. Good. Okay. So, according to Prabhupada, then the man must be trained and he must be strong in order to lead the wife. Because the nature of a woman is the mind is very strong. Women have very strong minds. And it's hard to control a woman's mind. Like that. Women find it hard to control their mind. It's just the nature of their body, their mind. It's very hard to control their minds. Sometimes they say things which cannot be explained. Sometimes they do things which cannot be explained. It's just the nature of the woman's mind. It's very strong. So the husband, he has to become very strong and he needs to be trained. So ideally, one goes through brahmacharya. Or he gets trained as a brahmachari. And by being trained, then he becomes self-controlled and sense-controlled and mind-controlled. And if he's controlled, then he can also control the wife's mind like that and guide her. But the situation is that many of the devotees I'm probably the only devotee in the room who has actually practiced brahmachari life, in a sense, in a formal way. I lived in the ashram formally. So that means that if you were not trained in the brahmachari ashram, then you have to catch up. And I remember my spiritual master said this a number of years ago in one lecture. He said, the grihasthas who join and they're already married are already together, or if they don't go through that formal brahmachari training, it is more difficult for them to catch up, because there's a lot of training you have to catch up on, and already you're living with the wife generally, and it's more difficult to develop that self-control, that mind control, that discipline yourself, because you're just developing yourself in Krishna consciousness, and then you also have to learn to control the wife's mind. So it takes time to do that. But one can do it because the process is very powerful. The association is very powerful. And if one gets the proper association, he can become qualified very quickly, and he can lead the family properly like that. So it is necessary to get training. So whether one is a brahmachari or whether one is a grihastha, he needs training in Krishna consciousness. And when one becomes trained, then he can lead the family properly. Mm. The men have to learn to deal with the women properly also. Generally, as we were saying last night, the women are actually in control of the household. They actually make most of the decisions in the household. They actually control the household by and large. So actually the woman is actually in control in many circumstances in the grihastha ashram. So the husband is just like he just observes what's going on. And if he sees that the woman or the wife is going outside certain parameters, then he will stop and then he will bring them back to where it should be. But generally on a day-to-day basis, the wife runs most of the things, she organizes most of the things. She controls the husband and she controls the house in most ways. She makes day-to-day decisions, she handles the finances, she does so many things. And the husband observes, he just makes sure everything is staying on track and going in the right direction. And then if things go too far, then he just brings it back in and then he keeps it going in the right direction. So the man has to become very strong and he has to become Krishna conscious. And then he can assist the wife and lead them back to the spiritual world. Well, they'll never have to take birth again. Any points?
Yeah.
Yes.
The last sentence of Prabhupada Prabhupada is very important. The household life in this Kali Yuga is extremely dangerous.
Any other point? Okay. Next purport. A woman's face is as attractive and beautiful as a blossoming lotus flower during autumn. Her words are very sweet, and they give pleasure to the ear. But if we study a woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp, like the blade of a razor. In these circumstances, who could understand the dealings of a woman? So, Leela Mai, would you like to read the first paragraph?
Woman is now depicted very well from the materialistic point of view by Kashyapa Muni. Women are generally known as the fair sex, and especially in youth, at the age of 16 or 17, women are very attractive to men. Therefore, woman's face is compared to a blooming lotus flower in autumn. Just as a lotus is extremely beautiful in autumn, a woman at the threshold of youthful beauty is extremely attractive. In Sanskrit, a woman's voice is called Nariswara, because women generally sing and their singing is very attractive. At the present moment, cinema artists, especially female singers, are especially welcome. Some of them earn fabulous amounts of money simply by singing. Therefore, as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a woman's singing is dangerous because it can make a sannyasi fall a victim to the woman. Sannyasa means giving up the company of women, but if a sannyasi hears the voice of a woman and sees a beautiful face, he certainly becomes attracted and is sure to fall down. There have been many examples. Even the great sage Vishwamitra fell a victim to Menaka. Therefore, a person desiring to advance in spiritual consciousness must be especially careful not to see a woman's face or hear a woman's voice. To see a woman's face and appreciate its beauty, or to hear a woman's voice and to appreciate her singing as very nice, is a subtle fall down from a brahmachari or sannyasi. Thus, the description of a woman's features by Kashyapa Muni is very instructive.
That's a good. So, what are the points in this verse?
Srila Prabhupada is saying that we should not be attracted by the beauty at the age of 16 or 17 especially, because they are very attractive. And if we hear their singing, there's a good chance of falling in.
Anything?
Srila Prabhupada says that the sannyasi is important to remain fixed in his consciousness, most especially Radha and Krishna. Is only by the worship of Srimati that rather than all material attachments will eventually dissolve.
Mm. There is a story about this Greek hero who was standing on the boat, and they were passing near the place where every boat will have a crash, and I don't know how he knew, but he knew that there were sirens there who were singing, and because of their singing, everyone got so bewildered and so much change of heart that all the boats crashed. Or I don't know exactly the details. So he told his sailors to tie him up for the. For the whatever it is, some pillar or whatever it is. So to tie him and not to untie him, whatever he tells him, until they pass that place. And he told them to put the plugs, wax plugs in the ears. So when they were passing and the sirens were singing so beautifully, he was screaming at the sailors, please untie me, but they didn't do anything. So he went away.
Where did you get that story from?
Yeah.
Yeah, I told the story. At least you were listening. That's good. Any other points? So, it means, generally when dealing with the opposite sex, then we have to be cautious. So Prabhupada points out that even with the daughter, with the mother, or the sister, one has to be very careful of dealing with them in solitude. That's how strong the material energy. Otherwise the mind can begin to wander and it can begin to contemplate sense gratification. So it is actually recommended by Chanakya and by the Vedas that we should be very cautious when dealing with the opposite sex. Otherwise the mind becomes bewildered and one becomes attracted to the material energy once again. So it means that devotees have to be formal in their dealings with the opposite sex. And then once again, that's why devotees are trained as brahmacharis, so that we learn how to deal with the opposite sex. Like that. So then if you have not had brahmachari training, then you have to learn the formal dealings in the grihastha ashram of how to deal properly. Even amongst husband and wife, there has to be restriction. It can't be unrestricted association. There has to be discipline. There has to be practical adjustments which are made. Just like my wife and I, we don't sleep in the same room. We haven't done that since we got married. Like that. We sleep in... It's not that you have to do that. Many of the grihasthas do sleep together in the same room, in the same bed. But we just find it easier for us to control our senses, to make some external arrangement. Plus it means you get a better night's sleep also. Like that. Because quite often you're sleeping in the same bed, then someone's moving and then you wake up and one person's hot, one person's cold, and they pull the doona and like that. So it's actually a practical thing as well. But in terms of controlling the senses, it's an external arrangement which we make in order to guard ourselves from falling down to illicit sex life. So we have to make practical arrangements as grihasthas, and we have to follow, as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, he said we should be brahmachari grihasthas, or grihastha brahmacharis, which means there has to be sense control, there has to be discipline even within the ashram. So even between husband and wife, we have to be careful how we associate. Now, and with the opposite sex in general, we just have to be careful how we associate, so that our consciousness does not become degraded, so that our consciousness continually elevates. Now, ultimately, we have to develop a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, param drishtva nivartate. In order to overcome your attachment to the lower thing, you have to develop attachment to the higher thing. As the Siddhi Raja Prabhu said, Veda Vyas Parimara said, that if you want to overcome your attachment to male-female dealings in this world, then you have to become ultimately attached to Radha and Krishna. And by that higher taste, then that will dissolve the taste for anything in this world. So, any points?
I'll give you an example. About 20 years back, I was in Berlin, in Germany, and Satyananda Swami was in charge there. And I saw quite a few young disciples, men and women, with wife and husband, and they were sleeping separately, completely. So, such a good discipline, I couldn't believe it. Practically, I saw.
Yeah, my spiritual master gave us that instruction when I was a brahmachari. He said that when you get married, then sleep separately like that. That's where I received that instruction from. I practiced that from the beginning of my grihastha life. So. You don't have to do it. There's no rule that says you have to do it. And many grihasthas do sleep together, but I just find it easier for my spiritual life to practice like that. Any other points?
He gave also the example of butter and fire.
It says, Srila Prabhupada says, the woman's heart is extremely sharp.
The Bhagavatam says that.
So what does, can you explain on that?
You have to ask the woman.
It says, if we understand, study the woman's mind, woman's heart, we can understand it to be extremely sharp.
I can't understand their mind. I've studied it for years, I still can't understand it. It's a lifelong study, I don't think I'll ever master it. As soon as you think you've worked it out, it does something different. So, can any of you answer why that the woman's mind is sharp?
Well, it's a heart, not mind.
Huh? Heart. The heart. Well, the heart is sharp. That's even worse. Okay. Can you please? Yes.
Because purple, it says from a materialistic point of view.
What does that mean?
The spiritual ladies are immune to having a sharp heart, hopefully.
Spiritual ladies are immune to having a sharp heart, hopefully. That's true. That's actually what it means. It's actually a material woman. Because it actually says, I think in the next purport, Prabhupada, or it might be further in this purport, Prabhupada, or the Bhagavatam says, that the woman can even kill her son, or her husband, or her brother, in order to, but no devoted woman would ever do that. Even my mother, like, she would never do that. She's not like a full devotee. She has some nice qualities. She would never kill her son or her husband or her brother, like that. So it's only for, you know, and then there's men who do that as well. There's men who kill their wives or their this or their that in order to get something. So it's a material consciousness which is being spoken of. But, you know, here the Bhagavatam is focusing on women. But then there's other places in the Bhagavatam where it focuses on men, or just people in general, or materialistic consciousness like that. So. Any other points?
It all depends on circumstances as well. Like, I was listening to Govind Prabhu's lecture, and he was talking about the Chitraketu Maharaj's passing. So in that, you are saying that obviously the ladies whom he had married, all the other wives who felt neglected, you know, in those times they used to be so particular about astrology. So he had married an observer, they were all qualified princesses whom he had married. But he said the circumstance was like that, that their minds became very spoiled. Otherwise, who would ever think of killing an innocent child? But, you know, because of those circumstances, then they killed. Otherwise, they were all very nice ladies, very faithful to their husband. They had all good qualifications. They had come from, you know, the future kings and all that. But still, you know, the situation warranted that they killed the baby. I think situations are the same. Like, not with devotees, but even generally, we see in the Bhagavatam, the situations which bring out that character quality in women.
Yeah, I wouldn't say warranted, because warranted means it gives permission to do it. So it's not, that's probably going just a little too far. They should not have done it. Yeah. I mean, they did it. We can understand why they did it psychologically. We can understand why they did it, but they should not have done it. So we have to be careful.
But that, I think that's what is also meant by, you know, women are just sharp. So when such situations come up, then that sharpness comes off.
Yeah, I've noticed. Yeah, sometimes you get them into a corner and then that's it. They just get you. So their hearts become very sharp, their tongues become very sharp. Just like, I don't know how to use computers. I don't know how to use them. I don't, you know. So generally, Chaitan does all my computer work, or my wife, Veda, she does all my computer work. So one time she was at the farm, she was in the office working on the computer, and she went out to the kitchen to cook lunch or something. And I came in and I looked at something, and I know a tiny bit, but then I did something, I deleted everything that she did. So she came back, and when she'd seen what I'd done, her tongue just went. I said, "You're the most stupid person on the earth, and you know, you have no brains in your head," and just like having me like that, you know. And then she walked out and finished cooking lunch, and she came back late and she said, "Sorry." She said, "You're not that stupid." Like that. But at the time, she just hit me like that, because, you know, I'd done, you know, she'd been working for 1 hour, 2 hours on the computer, and I just deleted the whole thing. Like that. She actually found it again later. Everything was deleted. But just at that moment, women can just sometimes... Men can do it as well. But it's not just women. Any other points?
Prabhupada, when he wrote this purport, that time, of course, these dangers were prevalent at that time, which they are today as well. But I think the situation has become much worse today. Personally, with my view, others may probably have a different view on this. But this Facebook is an utter nonsense. It's an utter nonsense and it's a waste of time. And they are there. Man lived and Facebook was not there. But every time, you know, that mail comes, that this Mataji wants to be your friend, and that Prabhuji wants to be your friend, and whatever. And I think it's just a disturbance at the end of the day. So and then especially if the boy is teenage or the girl is teenage, then this can really become a nuisance. In fact, even for some grihasthas, it has become a real nuisance. It has led to, you know, many marital problems, even amongst devotee grihasthas, the Facebook. We are up against tougher times than what Prabhupada is quoting here nowadays.
Yeah, Facebook was not there in Vedic times.
Just preach, but you can preach to Facebook. And I'm doing that thing. I'm preaching to Facebook. I'm putting slides on.
Indra Dumna Swami does a lot of preaching through Facebook as well, so it has a...
Yeah, if it's in the right hand, it's not a problem, but it's in the wrong hand. That's why I use the word, you know.
Yeah, correct. It's correct what you're saying, but we can use it in a good way also. We have to be very careful whom we are selecting as a friend. That's when you have to be very careful, because there are many nonsense.
The mind has to be very controlled. And someone says, this Mataji wants to be a friend. No, so the mind can give many suggestions.
No.
Mind is very...
Men's
mind is also like a razor. No, we are all walking on. What is that? Bhakti Ramata Bhakti. Kamala Dalamala Jeevana Talamala. They are tottering, actually. So, one wrong step and it can just...
See, I'm even more fanatical than you. So I take it even a step forward. You know, you say get rid of Facebook, I say get rid of computers. Because we didn't have them for thousands of years. I don't know how to use them. Like I was there today with one devotee, he had an iPad. It was called iPhone. like this, and he was talking to people in India while he's talking to me, like on the iPhone. I'm just amazed. I don't even know how this works. Yeah, I just get chased and they do everything for me because I don't understand it. Well, it's amazing like that. But my life works quite well. I don't have any Facebook account. I hardly have any email exchanges. My life's okay. I mean, of course, we can use everything in Krishna's service, but I think your point's good, that if we minimize these things, I think our life can be advantageous as well. I just have to keep going just because...
Just one short for Facebook, only very short. There was one Prabhu, they got all the information from Facebook, some, I don't know, whoever it is, a cheater. And they got all their information and they sent him email, they got the email, everything, and they said, oh, Prabhu, I'm in Spain and I lost my money, can you send me 300 euros to some of his friends? And he sent on some accounts. And when he asked his friend, will you come back, he said, I haven't been in Spain at all. So they get your personal information very easily. And it shouldn't be put the date of birth or something like that.
Yeah, it's a big, big business these days, internet scam. So, if you read the rest of the purport, then Prabhupada points out that he is... created a situation where everyone in this world will get shelter. So Prabhupada is not he's not against women, but rather he gave women shelter in a way that they hadn't been given shelter prior to his bringing the Vedic culture to the Western world. And the principal example is that before Prabhupada came to the West, there was no such thing as a Brahmacharini ashram. And it actually became very contentious in 1975 in Mayapur during the Gopinath festival that Tamal Krishna Maharaj and some of the other sannyasis and brahmacharis in ISKCON, they were actually pushing for all the women to be out of all the temples in ISKCON. He said, no women. And they were putting a lot of pressure. And Prabhupada, the way he dealt with it, if you listen to Hare Sori Prabhu's memoirs, Prabhupada actually didn't say anything. He just let them kind of debate amongst themselves for weeks. He actually just let the whole thing go on. And the grihasthas were arguing one way, brahmacharis were arguing one way, sannyasis were arguing another way. And Prabhupada, he didn't actually say anything final. And then he let it go right to like a point, and he let them try to resolve it themselves. And they were beginning to resolve it. But then finally Prabhupada gave his, and he said, no, the women must stay in ISKCON. He said that I have to give shelter to everyone in this material world because everyone has fallen in Kali Yuga. So it's not that men are necessarily more fallen than the women or the women are more fallen than the men. So this is Prabhupada's point. Even though the Bhagavatam is being heavy on the women at this point, but in other places the Bhagavatam is equally heavy on the men. So what the Bhagavatam is really targeting is materialistic consciousness. Devotees should not be like this. That's the point. Because Prabhupada will give shelter to everyone. He did not discriminate. Yeah, we'd have all sorts of problems. That's that. Okay, so we'll read one more. To satisfy their own interests, women deal with men as if the men were most dear to them, but no one is actually dear to them. Women are supposed to be very saintly, but for their own interests they can kill even their husbands, sons or brothers, or cause them to be killed by others. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that men should protect the women. Right? Because the women may have a tendency to be more materialistic than men, in general. It's not always the case, but some, in general you could say the women may be more materialistic. Just like women carry handbags. Right? Men don't carry handbags. Because the women, they need more paraphernalia. They have more material attachments, generally. Right? But only generally, we're speaking. But Prabhupada says the men should protect the women so that they do not become too carried away with materialistic thoughts. And also the women should protect the men so the men do not become too carried away. Sometimes the husband becomes too distracted with his iPhones and his computers and all of his paraphernalia. So the women also have to protect those things. And Prabhupada says that ultimately, we're being trained to act on the spiritual platform. We should get off the platform of thinking we are men or women and we should come to the spiritual platform, and that will resolve all the problems. So ultimately, that is what the Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. And that is what Krishna is teaching in the Bhagavad Gita. Go beyond this material concept of life. Go beyond your attachment to being male or female, and become absorbed in your eternal relationship with Krishna. And in this way, you will transcend all the problems which are there in the material world. Okay, so next Monday, we may start a short seminar on Raganuga Bhakti, which will go for 3 nights. So I'll try to have that ready by next week. So we should begin that next week. And then we'll finish the Bhagavatam, and probably in about 3 weeks or so, then we'll go into our final exams for the year. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.